The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
Good evening. You are listening to the Millwall Fan Show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, joined by the guys from No Lou Talking. Of course I am. Patricia Maslin. Hello, Patricia.
Good evening, everybody.
Lovely to have you on the show. George Lampy, hello.
Hello, Matt.
Lovely to have you on the show. And my word, look at the tan on him. Unbelievable. He looks like a new man. Stan Godwin, hello. Yeah,
well, I'm very well, thanks. And I feel quite new after last week's exertions around Cape Verde. But it was very good, I've got to say.
Lovely stuff. So what was this? This just a general holiday?
Well, it was what happened was my boy books up an holiday. And he said he was going to go and book an holiday up. And I said, yeah, okay. And off he went. And then I see him a couple of hours later and he'd booked it. And then the next night, my missus says to me, he wants to know if I want to go on holiday with him. And I said, well, where's he going then? And she said, Cape Verde. And I said, well, where's that? I mean, I'd never heard of the place. That's true. I'd never heard of it. And anyway, so I ended up going down there. But it was quite good. Quite good down there, I've got to say.
Yeah, good food.
Yeah, the food was okay and nice. Lovely. I mean, the hotel we was in, it wasn't just an hotel, it was like a complex.
And you're not going to get your snaps out, are you, and start showing them?
I've just seen them with his Millwall shirts on.
And I was flying the flag down there.
I'm sure you were, mate.
And the moment I posted that picture, or one of them, I thought, well, I know exactly what's going to come. And true to form, it did.
bit of backlash on social media, mate.
But the beauty of it was, I walk into the bar one night, right, and there's all these guys, Germans, and they're all I mean, Pat would have had a, she'd have freaked out. There was about half a dozen of these blokes wearing Bayern Munich replica shirts. And I'm thinking, well, where's Pat? Why, she should see this.
Well,
I'm partial to a German, am I?
Tune in to Wish You Were Here with Stan Godwin next week on A Love Sport. Guys, listen, let's get on to the football because it is two without a win now for the Lions. And I don't really know how much we can talk about last weekend's game with Sheffield Wednesday because, George, nothing really happened.
Well, see, I'm going to disagree with that. I mean, I'm reading everywhere. It was a bit of a drab game. In the first half, I thought we played some really good football, especially Ryan Woods. I thought he was excellent. He disappeared a little bit in the second half and they got a bit stronger. But I thought it was generally a very good game of football. You know, we had a great chance at the end that Bob Varson just made the biggest mess up possible, and I'm being polite in that. But no, I thought our football was of a very high standard, and a statistic that I don't like to use very often is that we had most of the possession of that game, and that will please Mr. Stan here on my left, because he's one where we haven't had possession in many games overall, have we? No.
Well, no, that's right. I mean, if you control the ball, you control the game, don't you? It's as simple as that. None of this long ball rubbish, hope and get on the end of it.
Well, I don't know about that. Is there something wrong with long ball football? I think sometimes we can be a bit too complicated.
Last week we were sitting there, me and my boy, watching these, because there was these channels there. They had, like, French teams on there. And every side, they played the ball out from the back. You know, every side, from the second division in Germany to wherever. all played out of the back.
That's all very well if you've got the personnel to do it. Look at Brentford when they came to your place. David Raya and getting dispossessed by Malombi. You know, I think that playing out from the back is okay if you've got the personnel. And to be fair, Brentford out, it's a bad example of that because they're very good on the deck. But you will get caught out. You see it in League One and League Two, week in, week out, errors because they consistently try and play out from the back.
No, that's right. But that's true. But you see, the problem I have with all this, right, is that, you know, we talk about the Premier League and they turn around and say the skill efforts, the gaps getting wider between the Championship and the Premier League. And I don't dispute that. And the Championship, you look at the Championship now, I mean, all intents and purposes, you could argue that it's a Mark II Premier League. But Millwall, under Harris, was the only team that Route 1'd it. And you're playing against players, and like the likes of Brentford, you keep giving them the ball. Mm. I mean, I was over there when we played them back in October. We give them the ball, and it was 3 or 4 minutes before we got it back. You know, and eventually you're going to give it away, and eventually you're going to pay the price.
Okay, well, I suppose that is a valid argument, Pat.
Yeah, but it's nice to be able to do both, to switch up to a long ball. We have been playing out from the back. Going back to last Saturday, I agree with George. First half hour, we were pretty good. It did then peter out into basically a nothing. The second half was boring. As you said, Pavardson, that miss. You've got to question whether he is actually a Championship player.
You reckon?
Yeah, I don't. I'm sorry, I've not seen anything there worth keeping him. And I think the transfer window in January, I think, should have looked for a striker. I know we've got Mason Bennett now, but
you're not sure about him, are you?
We were looking at his stats, weren't we? His scoring stats, and they're really poor. I mean, everyone's really excited about him, good, strong player going forward there, but his actual scoring stats aren't that impressive, are they?
No, well, this would be an opportunity for to see what Rowlett can do, won't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, give the guy a chance, but, you know, don't let's go overboard about it till we can actually see what he can do.
I have to say as well, I'm going to flip it. Rather than say it's two without a win, it's just one defeat in seven now, chaps. And Sheffield Wednesday, a very erratic proposition. You don't know what they're going to come up with. They can go and beat Leeds and they can get thumped at home by Blackburn. So, all things considered, Stan, a draw at Hillsborough, not the worst result in the world.
No, I mean, that's right. I mean, I didn't see the game, but I was saying before we come in here, I mean, I read a report from a journalist who was a Sheffield Wednesday supporter. Now, his take on it was different. His take was that Sheffield Wednesday, they were coming off the back of, what, 3 or 4 games where they'd been poor. They needed to up the ante. And that's what they, you know, they just come out and try to steamroll them in the wall. Now, I didn't see any of the game, but from what I can gather, it... they presumably, it looked like they'd done that to a degree, right? Oh, but you know, a year ago, we'd have lost that game. Being Sheffield Wednesday, being no doubt, we'd have lost that game. And we wouldn't have lost it by the odd goal. Mm. So, no, you know, these things happen. And, you know, we got the point, and that's fine, you know. Half a glass is better than an empty glass, isn't it? That's the way I look at it.
It is, mate. Absolutely. You have many half a glasses over in Cape Verde, no doubt.
Certainly was.
A couple of games coming up, of course, against West Brom and Fulham. We're going to look ahead to those later on in the show. But we're going to have an early edition of Lions Legend or Hero, ladies and gents, because it is Mr. That Is What We Do, Danny Shittu, the man, the legend. Interviewed him, actually, in the run-up on that, in the FA Cup build-up a few years ago. We went and sat in a cafe down at the London Docks. It was a thoroughly enjoyable afternoon. Really, really top bloke is Danny. This was nominated by Wes Little from Streatham. Pat, Danny Shittu, legend or hero?
Well, he's definitely not a legend. I don't think he actually had a sparkling career with us, did he? He had one very successful season, 2012-2013. He became captain, he got player of the year. But he's definitely not a legend. I mean, my memories of him of people trying to shoulder charge and just bouncing off him. He's the biggest footballer I've ever seen. He was built like a mountain. But yeah, I'd probably put him. I'm even debating on hero, actually. I don't know what the others think.
Oh, she's an hard woman, I tell you. She is hard. I think the point you make there, actually, Matt, is that Danny was the most loveliest man going. You know, he was a great big giant of a man, but he was a gorgeous fella. Of course, and then we got to the our cup run, and he penned that little bit where he said it, and it was brilliant. Everywhere on all our T-shirts and everything then, you know. But no, he wasn't a legend at the football club, but I think he's much loved by the supporters. Certainly.
I think characters like Danny Shittu become cult, don't they? Yes. Especially for a certain period of time when they play an important role. He scored in that cup run, didn't he? It was the year that Wigan won against Man City, wasn't it? 2012-13. So very, very close to making some history, Stan. But a player, yeah, not a hero, I suppose, Pat. Not really a legend, but a player fondly remembered by the fans.
Yeah, but you see, I have a slightly different take on it from the others, because I remember when Danny Shittu first came to us. I mean, he'd been released by Bolton, and Kenny Jackett brought him in. Obviously, there was the connection there from the QPR days, and he came in and he was doing quite well. And then all of a sudden, Warnock, who was at QPR, right, wouldn't take the chance on Shittu like we did. But he comes in, flashes cash, and shit, who's off, right? Mm. Now, I never forgot that. And when I heard the rumour that he was coming back, right, and I remember he'd come down, he was playing for QPR, I think it was the season they went up, and he got sent off. And I tell you, all the time he was playing that day, most of the crowd were giving him real stick because of the way he'd left under the circumstances, right? When he was coming back, I personally was always opposed to him coming back, because from my view was, well, if you didn't want us in the first place, sod you. That was my view. But I'll tell you why I changed my mind for it, and I will. When he came back, and for a little while after that, we was in trouble in terms of the table. And he could have gone to the African National Champions, wherever it was, and he turned around and said, no, I'm not doing that. He said, I've come back to Millwall, and I'm going to stay at Millwall. Once he made that decision, I didn't have any qualms about him after that. And I thought he was superb after that. I would, he's a cult figure, that's true. I've got no, as you said about, you know, I've got the T-shirt, that's what we do and all that stuff. I would say he was an hero in my view. Absolutely, no doubt. Because when you start talking about heroes and legends today, we invariably sort of make the comparison with yesteryear. And it's mm-hmm. a different game now. We're all different now. You know, some people would say that Morrison was a legend a few years ago.
One to the left of me would.
And I've got no argument with that. But what I'm saying is, a few years ago, he wouldn't have been considered a legend because the circumstances were different. So, no, I would say he's an hero, no question about that.
That is Stan Godwin there. Danny Shittu, a Millwall hero. Lovely. Great discussion, guys. We're going to move on and speak to a guest very shortly, this week's special guest. But first, the Millwall Community Trust, that's the MCT, are asking the following question. Could you be the next legend? The MCT are running schools holiday coaching from Monday the 17th of February at 9 a.m. through to Friday the 21st of February at 3 p.m. Cost varies from around £10 to £50. Now, what is happening? The whole week is coached by UEFA B and FA licensed coaches. Prizes and trophies are there to be won throughout the week, and it is open to boys and girls aged 5 to 12 years old. Sessions will include passing, shooting, attacking and defending. You can learn something here, Stan, I tell you what. Competitions and matches. You need to bring a football kit and shin pads, football boots or trainers, a packed lunch, plenty to drink and a waterproof jacket. All coaches are DBS checked, plus first aid and safeguarding trained. It's all happening at the Lions Centre, Ballina Road, London. That is SE15 3LD. And to get involved, contact Dean Palmer by phone on 0207 740 0503 or by email dpalmer@millwallcommunity.org.uk. That is dpalmer@millwallcommunity.org.uk. This is the Millwall Fan Show on Love Sport. Plenty more coming up.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
It's the Millwall Fan Show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, and the guys from the No Lou Talking podcast, Patricia Maslin, Stan Godwin, and George Lampy. Right now, it is time to speak to our very, very special guest who signed for Millwall in a player exchange from Leyton Orient on the 17th of May 1975. He stayed with the Lions until the 19th of January 1978, just 3 years later, when he left to go down the road to the Valley for a fee of $25,000 at the time. He also featured for Southend, Portsmouth, Maidstone and Chelmsford City during his career. He actually attended, I'll tell you what, a bit of a history lesson we've got here, Whitechapel Secondary School, together with Dennis Roth, who later played alongside him at Orient, and his career started whilst playing for East London Boys in a cup final at Brisbane Road. That was the start, of course, of a lengthy, lengthy career. Terry Brisley, welcome to the Millwall Fan Show.
Good evening, Matt. Good evening, guys.
Hello,
evening, Terry.
Great to have you on the show, Terry. First and foremost, we've got to talk about this player exchange. Was that a classic old school swap deal?
Old school swap. You should have seen what there was a swapping in the schools when I was down there. it was just one of those things that at the Orient, myself and Barry Fairbrother were being quite overlooked, so we thought it's time to move. And Dougie, I don't know what the situation was with Dougie Alder, but it was Dougie Alder for me and Barry Fairbrother. So everything was clean, everything was tidy. It was obviously a great move for me, being a Millwall supporter. Well, not such a good move for Barry Fairbrother, because he was an Orient hero, and he had injury problems when he went to the Den, and he didn't actually show what he was worth, to be perfectly honest. As I say, the injuries didn't do a lot of good. And I'm afraid Dougie went to the Orient, and I don't think Dougie, you know, even now would be the first to admit it probably wasn't a fantastic move for him as well. I don't know, I might be completely wrong there, but Dougie's career, who was a very, very good player at Millwall, it seems to stagnate a little bit when he went to the ice.
Yeah. Terry, it's George. Hello, mate.
Hello, mate.
At the time you were playing for Millwall, you cited your father as the biggest inspiration of your career, but who inspired you amongst the Millwall playing staff?
The staff, all of them. All of them. I've said it countless times that with the six or seven teams that I've been associated with in my career, I mean, I've always felt that the way Gordon Jago tried to propel his way of football was exactly the way that I liked it. I playing much shorter rather than playing long ball. So I always thought, like, as a coach-wise, Jago was the best. And then at the time I was here, I was a very lucky man that we had Theo Foley and, of course, that old stalwart Billy Neal. It was just a fantastic group of backroom people that the supporters obviously don't see too much of, but the players every day see them all the time, and sometimes they do get on your nerves, but they were just brilliant. I mean, in my career, those three were fantastic. And I've been lucky. Most of the clubs that I've been to, the backroom staff, you know, have been exceptionally good, but Millwall, I was lucky not only to play for them, the club that I loved, I had three guys like looking after me and showing me the way, which suited me down to the ground.
I always got the impression with Gordon Jago, that he was ahead of his time as a football manager.
Well, he's a great PR man, and he's showing what he's doing over in the States. I don't know if it's San Diego. I don't know the state they're doing with the kids' football, but it's just a huge competition that he's been doing for donkey's years now. And he's a great PR man. He's always destined to go to someone like the States because his PR is brilliant. But it's the football fraternity that I like with Gordon. Other players, it didn't suit, you know. I mean, I think he was quite hard on a few really established names, i.e. one, Alan Dorney, who was a really good pal. Alan Dorney was a hell of a good player. And he was just unfortunate that at the time Gordon was there. Gordon, obviously, we had the man, we had the king, Kitch, who, you know, he's rock solid. He's always there. And he wanted to bring somebody else in. He brought in Tony Azle. And Tony Azle and Kitchener missed very, very few games. And then, you know, that really messes up a guy like Alan Dorney's career. But that's what happens in football.
Yeah,
that's what happens in football. But going back to Jago, Jago just liked to play it short because he'd come from a first division club, QPR. And it was great for me because that's the way I like playing.
Hello, Terry. It's Pat speaking.
Hello, Patty.
You're coming to the Swansea game, which is Dockers Day, with your dad. You'll be giving out
My dad passed away a year ago.
God, I'm so sorry.
That's okay, mate.
Oh, you're coming with your brother, which would be nice.
I come with my brother. My brother was working down the docks as well.
Yeah.
With my dad.
Okay. You're giving out the medals. How important are these days to the ex-players?
Well, it's fantastic, you know, and it's why it's got to keep going on and on and on, because Millwall was always steeped in history, and most of that history was from the docks, you know. When I was a kid growing up, everything was dock. I lived in Cable Street, which is, you know, in between. Well, basically, you could just spit on the docks from Cable Street. And so my family were involved, and it was part and parcel of life. You know, all your friends' fathers were in the docks. Everybody seemed to know a docker. And actually, going back to the very, very early days of the history of Millwall, going on the Isle of Dogs, all this type of thing, it was all from the docks. So we've got to keep it going. Whatever happens in life, you've got to keep some things going. Yeah. In historic value for football clubs. And obviously, one of them is the Dockers Day. You just got to keep it going because it's brilliant.
Yeah, Terry, this is Stan here, and I agree with you, all right, and I agree with you what you say about the Dockers Day, because the trouble is today, in my view, with a lot of these football clubs, they tend to forget their roots and where they come from, you know. Right. And thankfully, we're one of those clubs that don't do that. And when the Dockers Day was when it was introduced, and I know Chris Bethel had a lot to do with it initially.
He's the man.
Yeah, that's right, and full credit to him, you know. Anyway, the thing I'm going to ask you now, because I remember we had when I used to do with Georgie the Lions live show, we had a conversation one day. One of your old mates, Trevor Lee, right?
Yep.
And what he told us was in terms of the guy that George, what's the manager?
George Petchy has just passed away as well. Very
that's
sad.
Right.
Up for that, wouldn't you?
But what Trevor was saying was he turned around and he was telling us. He said that when it was known that George Petchy was coming in, now this is what Trevor says. Okay, he turned around and said that there was a conversation going on, and he reckoned that you and Barry Fairbrother said once you knew that George Petchy was going to be coming, that you wasn't going to be long for Millwall. Right. And he then went on to say, but he said, as it turned out, it didn't work that way, he said, because he said, I turned up at the ground one day, and he said, and I was the first one out. He said, there was all these Millwall supporters there telling him that he'd been sold to Colchester or something. And that's the story he told. Is that a fact? I mean, I'm not suggesting he was lying.
Well,
but I mean,
I don't know what happened with him and George, and as I say, the manager just passed away, so we've got to be very respectful for his family and all that.
Right.
He's probably
going
through a torrid time at the moment. We didn't see eye to eye on things. That's what happens in life, you know. I mean, as I just explained there, Gordon Jago and Alan Dorney. I'm sure if you had Alan beside you here, he would agree that in your career you're never going to have it fantastic. That every single club that you're playing at, you're going to get on with the manager or whatever. And the case with George was that me and Barry Fairbrother were at the Orient, and we was happy at the Orient, but we just didn't think it was going to create a fair crack at the whip. So we just quite rightly said, well, how about if you just get us away and get somebody here who wants to stay at the Orient and be at the Orient? And that's what we did. It was very amicable and all that. But it wasn't so much Barry Fairbrother. It was me and Ray Goddard, the goalkeeper. Because Ray was the one who had a real... I'm afraid he's no longer with us. He passed away a long time ago. Ray did have problems, I'm afraid. But as regards Trevor, I wouldn't know about Trevor. I know he went to Colchester. I saw him play at Portsmouth once at Colchester, where he played out and out centre forward, and he was scoring goals like nobody's business. So I didn't know about that particular story about Trevor. But all I knew about when George came, my position at Millwall would not have been long, even though we had verbally agreed that I was going to stay to the end of the season. At that time, George Petchy had not been signed on by the chairman and directors of the club. and they were going to make a decision at the end of the season. Mm. And I turned around to Mr. Burnage and said, right, to be fair, I'll stay to the end of the season, but if you do actually take George on as a recognised manager, actually, of the club, then I will partly pass in on, as simple as that. And everything was agreed, and within 1 week, I got a phone call. Well, I didn't get a phone call. I was told, you better get yourself down to Charlton and have a word with Andy Nelson, and that's what I did. That was it. It was good to that.
I was watching your the Millwall History tape the other day, or on the DVD, and I saw it. I was watching that game where we beat Chelsea 3-0.
Yep.
And Ray Evans put that cracker in, and then there was your header, wasn't it? You hit the ball, and it hit the bar, come down, and it hit Peter Manetti on the back and went in.
Yeah.
That was some game, some game.
Oh, it was brilliant. I mean, it was a great game. That whole day was great. I mean, the crowd was great, 23,000 or whatever, blah, blah, blah. And at the time, you got to understand that Chelsea were like first, second favourites. You know, they had all the young kids vying for England internationals and all that. So they had a few old ones, Mickey Droy and
Butch Wilkins. They had Butch Wilkins as a youngster.
Well, they had Benetti, you know, England got they had quality, and they was expected. And in the first half, we put on a fantastic performance. The second half, the game was over at half-time anyway, 3-0. We had the chance in the second half to make it 4-0, but in general, you know, the overall performance was great. And then when we went to their place and we drew 1-1, the time when we was 1-0 up, I was lucky to nick a goal there. And then Ray got an injury to his eye and he had to come off. And we was 1-0 up with 10 minutes to go, and David Donaldson had to go in goal. And that was it, 1-1. We played exceptionally well there as well. So in all, I think Chelsea actually went up again. I might be wrong, but I think Chelsea went up that season as well. You know, we took, in those days, 3 out of 4 points out of Chelsea, which was fantastic.
Terry, it's been great hearing your stories. I'm just going to... We could talk about this all night, couldn't we, guys? I'm just going to bring you... Yeah, I'm going to bring you through just to the current crop now. You still follow the boys. Gary Rowett, impressed with him. There is a shout, of course, a realistic shout of the playoffs this season. How do you foresee the rest of the campaign going?
Well, I think, you know, everybody's got to be applauded, really, for coming in at a time which was, let's say this, getting a little bit sticky. And he's come in. He's very experienced in this type of division. He's been to numerous clubs. I've only been down the ground once this year because I live so far away, and that was the Charlton game. And I could see that the actual... the play was different. He's playing a shorter game. He's playing a passing game. Neil, bless him, you know, I thought Neil done fantastically well for the time that he's managing the club. But he was a bit... he was a bit, you know, just long ball in his game, totally against what I like. But let's be perfectly honest, Neil done a fantastic job for the years that he was in manager, not only as a player, but as a manager as well. So Gary's just come in, and it's a different way of playing. The boys that he's got there at the moment seem to have a fantastic relationship. They keep on saying that the atmosphere in the dressing room is brilliant, which you have to have. That's part and parcel of having successful sides. You've got to have it on the training ground, having the laugh and the joke, and you've got to have that camaraderie when you get in that dressing room. But, of course, when that bell goes and you go out on that pitch, then the camaraderie is in the game of football and full concentration for 90 minutes. And that's what I think Gary's doing at the moment. So I applaud him and just hope the crowd get behind him and the team to the end of the season. And who knows? It's so close in there at the moment. Who knows?
Who knows? Terry, thank you very much for joining us, boss.
Cheers, Terry.
Right, cheers, Terry.
Terry Brisley there with a treasure trove of stories. Like I said, we could have done that for the rest of the evening, couldn't we? I mean... I did have visions of Stan Godwin just reclining in his chaise lounge watching The History of Millwall on DVD for about the 10th time this year. To be fair, do you know what? I did something similar to you, Stan, this week. I got down a YouTube rabbit hole, as you do, and I ended up watching the playoff final from 2010, was it, against Swindon?
Ended
up watching that.
Charlie Austin missed that shot.
An absolute sitter. Really should have equalised then, shouldn't he?
It's always been one of our favourites.
Steve Morrison, of course. Very good performance on that day, Pat. Nice little chip he nearly scored with as well in that game. This is the Millwall Fan Show here on Love Sport. Next, we're going to be talking youth. We've got our fan in the dugout, and we're going to be looking ahead to those two games with West Brom and Fulham.
We've all got one, and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio, your fan station.
It's the Millwall Fan Show here on Love Sport. And me, Matt Beadle, with the guys from the No Lou Talking podcast. Love having them on the show. Soon we're going to be speaking to another fan. Nigel Gray is going to be joining us. But before we get to Nigel, just a quick update from the FA Youth Cup. And Sean O'Brien, Abdul Malik, both scorers in the previous round, and Tyrese Briscoe were on target as the under-18s won a dramatic fifth round tie 3-2. At AFC Bournemouth on Tuesday evening. O'Brien lashed home from 20 yards out, just 6 minutes in, to give the Lions the lead before Abdul Malik doubled the advantage. Two quick-fire goals from Bournemouth drew the game level before Briscoe stepped off the bench to win the game and put Millwall into the last eight. They face a trip to either Chelsea or Wolves in the quarterfinals. Additionally, by the way, we must add our congratulations to Abdul Malik on being called up to the England under-17 squad last week. He'll link up with the national side in February as they take on Ukraine twice and Russia in Spain. But now, chaps, we shall move on to the fan in the dugout who has supported the Lions man and boy, is a season ticket holder and lives in the Darenth Valley these days. Delighted to say we have Nigel Gray on the line. Hello, Nigel.
Hello there.
Lovely to have you on. Talk to me. What's the plan for the programmes? You've got a bit of a big collection going on.
That's right. I was turning out my loft and I had bags and bags of Millwall programmes up there. I've got nearly 500 in total, which range from, they start in 1971-72 season when we almost made it to the top division, and they run right the way through to 97-98. It's not a complete collection, but as I say, there's nearly 500, but it would make a very good start for somebody who wants to collect Millwall programmes, or else alternatively there's some quite interesting ones in there. For example, from 74-75, the evening game against Manchester United in Division 2 when Man United weren't in the top division just for one season. There's other programmes like the famous FA Cup sixth round game against Ipswich where Mr. Robson said that they should, the authorities should turn the flamethrowers on the Millwall fans up the Alderton Road end. So there's some interesting programmes in there. But as I say, it's a fairly extensive collection. It's not complete, but it's not only league games. There's FA Cup games. There's Coca-Cola Cup. There's some testimonials, including Harry Cripps' testimonial against West Ham from 1971-72.
Wow.
So fairly extensive, and what I'd like to do is auction them off, sell them in support of the hospice in memory of Mark.
That's Mark Upperton. So it's in aid of St. Peter and St. James Hospice in Sussex. They cared, didn't they, for Mark Upperton. Millwall fan, sadly lost his battle with cancer. Very admirable thing that you're doing, Nigel. And programmes in particular, they're a funny old beast, aren't they? We had this conversation, actually, with a fan who came on one of our shows last weekend. I think it was the AFC Wimbledon programme editor, about the power of programmes these days. Because in one sense, I suppose, with everything we have now and the immediacy of news and football online, on social media, on Twitter, on various websites now, you get everything at the click of a finger. Programmes can almost seem like a bit of an archaic beast, I suppose, but they're still an integral part of that match day experience, aren't they?
They are, and you know, they're quite interesting, actually, you know, looking back on the old programmes, particularly when you had sort of, I think it was in the 70s, you had features written by Des O'Connor in the programme.
I remember those.
And all the old adverts for all the car dealers and all the shops in New Cross. So they're kind of almost, I won't say historical documents, but they're interesting just as a read as well, you know, and all the comments by the various managers that we've had throughout down the years as well.
Hello, Gary, it's Pat here. Oh, Nigel, sorry, I'm reading your surname there. Sorry, Nigel. On to Millwall matters. How are you thinking about Rowlett's doing this season?
I like him. I think he's a really excellent appointment for us. I think in common with many other fans, what I like about Gary is if something's not working, he changes it straight away. He doesn't hang around like Neil Harris used to do, 5 minutes from the end and then puts up, you're not going to change a game then. But what I thought was impressive about Gary was the game against Luton wasn't working at all. So 5 minutes before half time, took Alex Pearce off, who was playing very well, brought on our friend Mr. Bradshaw and changed the game. And of course, we went on to win handsomely in the second half.
Hello, Nigel, it's George.
Hello, George.
How do you expect the season to pan out, and where do you think the Lions will finish?
I'd like to think we're going to finish in the playoffs. That would cause mixed emotions for me because I'll be in bloody Portugal if we do reach the playoffs. So that's not too clever of me, sorting out a holiday at the end of May, but there you go. I think we're going to. I think the next three games are going to be very important as to where we finish. If we can, not necessarily get 9 points, but if we can get 7 points, you know, get back in touch with the playoffs, I think we could scrape in at six. But realistically, I think we're going to finish around about ninth or tenth. But even then, that will far surpass my expectations from some of the games which we saw earlier in the season, where I really did think we're going to have another repeat of last season and fighting against potential relegation.
That would be quite an achievement now, wouldn't it?
Optimistic, yeah.
Yeah, that would be quite an achievement, Nigel, if we ended up even, you know, anywhere in the top 10. It would be marvellous after last season.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
Yeah, Nigel, Stan here. I was listening with great interest about your programmes because... I mean, I've got my collection of programmes and my missus is constantly looking for some sort of excuse to get rid of them. And I keep saying to her, I say, so, well, there's no contest. The programmes, if anyone's going to have to go, the programmes are you, it's you. So, yeah, no, but no, because I got all my programmes back from the 60s when I first come all the way through, you know. So,
yeah.
I know they are interesting reading, and you read some of these things in there and you think, blimey, like, you know, it's a real eye opener to some of them. But anyway, tell me something. Who would be the three standout players for you this season at Millwall?
Standout players, I think, Bart. Coming in as he did from Ipswich and has been outstanding for us in goal, and I think was one of the most important signings that we made before the end of the transfer window. I'd say that was an outstanding one which we signed, and I quite actually also like the look of Ryan Woods. I was up at West Brom, not West Brom, beg your pardon, Sheffield Wednesday last Saturday. Very impressed by, you know, the way he read the game, very calm, distributed the ball really well. So I think we've got some good players there now, good squad.
I agree with you, Nigel. And let's just look ahead to the games coming up, of course. Playing first, playing third. Two big games for the Lions. There or thereabouts, 5 points adrift of the playoff places now. Tough to get 6 points out of these two, don't you think?
Well, hopefully on Sunday we'll be sending Adrian Charles home with, you know, assuming he's going to be there, the great baggy supporter with his tail between his legs and most upset when we give them a beating. But you know, if we can get a point against West Brom, I'll be happy. Fulham, anything's got to be better than what I saw over at Fulham earlier in the season where we just didn't turn up. It was the most gutless, pathetic performance I'd seen from the Lions in a long time. So hopefully we can get our revenge and turn it around against Fulham.
Lovely stuff. And Nigel, one more actually before you go. Favourite players past and present? I reckon this could cause a few waves inside this studio here. Favourite player of past?
I will go with past.
Yep.
Which I would say, or it wasn't with us for very long, but as soon as he came on the pitch, second half against Bristol City, Tuesday night, just early in January, Harry Kane, what a player. You could see as soon as Harry came on what a great player he was. I think he was only about 18 or 19. But if we hadn't have had Harry Kane scoring the goals that season, we would have been relegated. And I've never seen possibly Paul Gascoigne, but he never played for us. But Harry Kane, you could see straight away, great player. And, you know, Harry's now gone on and... done some great things, albeit injured until the end of the season now. but magnificent player, Harry Kane.
Nigel, thank you very much for joining us. Great having you on this evening. That was Nigel Gray there, the fan in the dugout. Harry Kane, Stan. Greatest
well,
player.
I can fully endorse that, to be fair. And also, in fairness to Harry Kane, I mean, he's always said that when he came down, I often say this, I say this to my grandsons, but we polished him. He came to Millwall, we turned him from a boy to a man.
Mm.
And to be fair, in his book, he's admitted that, Harry Kane, hasn't he? Well, you know that, George, because you're in the book as well, weren't you?
I am indeed, yes.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I did a little bit for the writer of the book. Yeah, I did, actually. He asked, wanted to know how Harry was when he came to us, and I just give him my opinion. That's all. It was nothing special. Don't get carried away, guys.
Come on, George, go on. What did you give? What opinion did you give?
Well, you could just see the boy grow from the moment he came to our football club. And as Nigel said, we wouldn't have stayed up that season without him just scoring all them goals and assists. He really blossomed. You could see, and I don't think we ever had a chance of keeping him. Spurs knew exactly what a duel they had there. But no, he was a great boy, and I just mentioned that in the book.
And the book was, sorry?
Harry Kane, you know.
A biography.
Yeah.
I mean, I say this in all honesty. If Harry Kane turned up, I mean, he's out injured at the moment, isn't he? But if at some point, you know, he was walking and then he decided one day to come down to Millwall, and he walks on, and they brought him onto the pitch, I've got no doubt he'd get a standing ovation. Mm. Absolutely no doubt about that.
Good stuff. Harry Kane. A Millwall, could be a future topic, couldn't he? Hero or legend? Pat's already shaking her head.
Well,
she's not happy about that one.
You know, a low knee. Should he be included?
Very good point. A debate for another day, we shall say. Right, next up on the Millwall Fan Show, we're looking ahead to those games with West Brom and Fulham.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
The Millwall Fan Show here on Love Sport London. Me, Matt Beadle, and the guys from No Lou are talking. We're going to preview, get onto the game. Of course, the big game against West Brom at the weekend. Lunchtime game. You can catch that on the Sky Sports cameras, of course. But before we do that, just a quick update on the Lionesses. They remain top of the league despite their game with Hoddesdon Town Owls being postponed due to a waterlogged pitch. Ahead of the game, ever-present midfielder and new club captain Libby Stubbs talked about her pride in becoming captain and her new role.
A lot of history behind me all, so I'm very proud to have been named captain. Obviously, we've got a great bunch of girls, so I'm looking forward to pushing it over the line for the end of the season, hopefully getting the league win. And it's been great having staff and Colin behind us, so yeah, looking forward to it. I feel I've progressed a lot as a player since I've joined Millwall. Having someone like Colin has been excellent for me to develop my game. When I come here, I was more of an attacking centre midfielder, but I've dropped back to defensive midfield, and learning that position has been great. And I've learned a lot on the basics and developed. I think I have a great positive outlook on everything, to get the girls together, push through the games like we did on Sunday, get the points that we need to continue to be top of the table and push us over the finish line and win the league and get a promotion.
Libby Stubbs, their new club captain of Millwall Lionesses. No game for the girls this Sunday, but we'll bring you up to date once again next Thursday with all the latest developments there. Now, guys, it is West Brom, of course, up on Sunday. A game for the TV cameras. Sky Sports will be there. What's the history, Stan? You're probably best placed to answer this, I'd say, in terms of Millwall being on TV.
Oh, well, I'm not a great fan of that. I mean, no, I'm not.
Because do you ask that question because you think me and Pat are drunk at most West Brom?
No, I mean, to be honest with you, I don't like it when they change these games from 3 o'clock Saturday to 12 o'clock to put them on the television. I mean, that gets right under my skin. But anyway, no, I mean, our record at when we played West Brom, I can't recall West Brom in recent years, and I'm talking about in the last probably decade or more, and we've not come across each other that much, but I can't ever recall them coming down and beating us at the Den. So, I mean, but they're always, you know, West Brom are a good side. They're there, you know, because they're a good side. And I've got no doubt it'll be a good game. And I'm confident we'll come out with a win.
Yeah?
Well, I mean, we've got to work hard for him. We ain't just rock up. But I mean, you know, but I know we can win the game, in my view.
But you have to go all the way back to April 1987, Stan, for the last time West Brom won at the Den. Well, so you're very accurate there.
There you are.
Very good, Stan. Well, Pat, their form in recent weeks, of course, has not been good. Good in the FA Cup, but I think they got their first win in eight last weekend against Luton Town. First time, by the way, they'd kept a clean sheet this season at home, West Brom. The only club in the Championship who hadn't kept a clean sheet, which is quite remarkable when you think they're top of the league. They're not on good form at the moment in the Championship, you'd argue. And when speaking to some of the Luton fans on the Luton Town fan show, they were actually disappointed because they felt like West Brom were there for the taking.
Really? I think anyone at home for us, I mean, are there for the taking. We've hopefully got that Mason Bennett coming in. He'll probably be on the bench, I should think. He won't get in the first 11. We've also got Leonard available now, haven't we? Oh, he's been out for 4 months injured. I think we'll give him a good game. I'm like Stan, I don't like it when I'm on the TV. The crowds are down. You don't get the atmosphere. But, I can see us perhaps sneaking this one. Goal difference?
Well, I'm just reading that they've only lost once all season, although you're making the point they've obviously had plenty of draws. I'm lying with the guys. I think that, you know, we're going to give a good account of ourselves. We've been playing very well of late, and I think as good, they wouldn't be up there without being, you know, doing very well themselves. So although I don't know a great deal about them, I think we will do fine, actually.
Yeah, they've lost more. I mean, they've lost four times this season, season.
Yeah.
But there was, of course, earlier on in the campaign, not really that you can read too much into it, but there was an EFL Cup win, wasn't there, in the Hawthorns?
Yeah, that's right.
So a mini psychological boost in that sense.
We have got nothing to fear. Nothing to fear at all.
So in terms of the season then, guys, it's 5 points adrift of the playoffs now. We've got Fulham coming up, of course, before we next speak. As well, Stan, are you comfortable with the way things are?
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking about in terms of playing wise, I mean, when we played Brentford the other week, I mean, I sat back and there was people around us. I mean, we just watched it go. I mean, it was brilliant. You know, people were saying, well, why weren't we playing like this under Harris? You know, and the performance we put in, it would not have been possible to have done it under Harris, to be perfectly honest. And I mean, it was superb. And no, the quality of football is a lot better, and that's what you're up against in that division. No, I'm more than happy, and we, you know, not just in terms of the first team. There's other things happening around the club, which seem to be suggesting that we're going in the right direction. I've got no qualms at all.
If we finish 10th or above, it's a successful season for Millwall. The trouble is, now we've lost that FA Cup game, which, you know, really niggled me. If we don't make the playoffs, why did we throw that?
I don't take the view that we threw the game at all. Sheffield United, I mean, it wasn't their best team, but they're a good side. And I simply don't subscribe to this nonsense that the FA Cup don't count, and, you know, and it's a distraction and all this rubbish. I just ain't having it.
If you watch that game, the first half, when we went in at 0-0, you knew they were there for the taking.
I grant you. But Sheffield United in the first half was on the back foot. And you know when the second half comes, they ain't going to be on the back foot, which they wasn't.
As soon as Wallace come on, we had two
good
chances.
Shall I bring this back to Fulham?
Well, I think what's key, before we go, gents, we've got just under 3 minutes to go. Two games on the bounce now at the Den. Lost just twice there all season. Only Cardiff can better that on home soil this season in the Championship. So that is something, isn't it, that we can look to. The Fortress Den. West Brom coming here in top of the league. Fulham coming here third in the league. It's an opportunity to do one over the big boys.
Yeah, I mean, this is an important week for us. I think two very hard games. They're at home. We are playing much better football. We know, I think Fulham are coming on strong. I think they may well even break into the top two. But I think there's a chance here. We are going to give a good account of ourselves, I believe, on both of these games.
All right, I'm going to get a quick score prediction on both of those games from you now. Pat, you start.
I think we'll be West Bromwich. I think it was 1-0. I think we'll draw with Fulham.
George?
I think we're going to beat West Brom 2-0. And I think we're going to draw with Fulham.
Dan?
Well, I think we're going to beat West Brom by the odd goal. And I think that we can beat. I mean, Fulham can be beaten. There won't be no repeat of that nonsense we see at the beginning of the season. That's a certainty. But no, they're both there. They're both beatable. And we've got no reason to fear them.
Lovely. This has been the Millwall Fan Show here on Love Sport. We'll be back next week reflecting on those two games, looking ahead to that trip to Preston to Millwall Fan Show next Thursday, 9 p.m. See you then.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.